What if everything we've been taught about education is wrong? Imagine a world where children learn without being taught, where curiosity flourishes without curriculum, and where the line between living and learning disappears entirely. This is the radical vision at the heart of Kerry MacDonald's groundbreaking book, Unschooled. As traditional education faces mounting criticism for crushing creativity and natural curiosity, MacDonald's work has become a rallying cry for families seeking alternatives to conventional schooling. The book has found champions in Silicon Valley tech leaders and progressive educators alike, with Tesla CEO Elon Musk notably praising its approach as more aligned with how humans actually learn. With mental health issues among schoolchildren at record highs and employers increasingly valuing creativity over compliance, MacDonald's exploration of education without schooling couldn't be more timely. Drawing from her Harvard education background and experience as a mother of four never-schooled children, she presents a compelling case that might forever change how you view learning. The contrast was striking. As my unschooled children freely explored tide pools on Cape Cod, shrieking with excitement at each discovery, a busload of middle school students arrived with worksheets. When one girl found something interesting not listed on her worksheet, her friend dismissed it, "It's not on the worksheet," and walked away. The girl's enthusiasm visibly deflated as she dropped her discovery to continue the assignment. This scene captures what education has become in America, a system that systematically diminishes children's natural curiosity rather than nurturing it. Children don't lose their drive to explore at a certain age. Our industrial schooling model extinguishes it. As educator John Holt observed in 1967, we like to say that we send children to school to teach them to think. What we do, all too often, is to teach them to think badly. The transformation of American education from family-centered learning to institutional schooling happened relatively recently. When the Pilgrims arrived in 1620, education remained primarily the family's responsibility. The 1642 Massachusetts Compulsory Education Statute required families to ensure good education for their children, but didn't mandate schooling. Throughout the 17th and 18th centuries, families remained the primary educational institution, with parents choosing whether to send children to schools, when, and for how long. This changed dramatically in the mid-19th century when Horace Mann, the father of American public education, became enamored with the Prussian model of compulsory schooling, a system emphasizing order, compliance, and standardization. Contrary to popular belief, illiteracy wasn't rampant before compulsory schooling. Approximately three-quarters of Americans were literate by 1840. The real catalyst for institutional schooling was fear of immigrants, particularly Irish Catholics who threatened Protestant cultural dominance. Mann deeply distrusted parents, particularly immigrants, calling them corrupt while hypocritically homeschooling his own three children. In 1852, Massachusetts passed the nation's first compulsory schooling law, requiring children 8 to 14 to attend school at least 12 weeks yearly. By 1918, all states had adopted similar laws, with parents who didn't comply facing fines, jail, or loss of parental rights. This shift narrowed education from a broadly defined social good with diverse learning modes to institutionalized schooling. The tug of war between parental rights and government power continued throughout the 20th century, with compulsory schooling laws tightening until the homeschooling movement began its modern revival in the 1970s, first among countercultural liberals and later among religious conservatives. For many children, this system causes deep wounds as their natural learning spirit dims. Those who succeed in school are simply better at burying these wounds and conforming. Beyond obvious harms like bullying are subtler ones. We become conditioned to seek extrinsic rewards and lose creativity as we conform to arbitrary demands. As educator Parker Palmer notes, these wounds range from, "I found out that I have no gift of creativity," to, "They drained off my self-confidence." Most tragic is how our natural eagerness to learn gets diminished or destroyed through schooling. I have been in the classroom my entire life, since the womb, says Katie Lane Karnos, an unschooling mom to daughters May and Juniper. With both parents as professional educators, Katie's path to becoming a public school teacher seemed predestined. After teaching for years, Katie grew disturbed by what she witnessed. How easily children could be dismissed, quieted, belittled, judged in small ways. She saw second graders' enthusiasm deflated, immigrant children's native language literacy devalued, and middle schoolers unable to incorporate their genuine interests into their education. Though frustrated enough to quit teaching, Katie still planned to send her own children to public school. Before enrolling her 5-year-old daughter May in kindergarten, she observed a classroom and was struck by the mismatch with her daughter's personality. She saw her exuberant, creative child potentially being molded into compliance, with her natural curiosity and experimentation discouraged. After exploring various options, Katie and her husband chose to homeschool with an unschooling approach. The decision transformed their family dynamic. Suddenly, without school expectations looming, my relationship with my daughter improved dramatically. I realized how many things about her I was trying to gently change to make her more acceptable in school. Letting go of school was letting go of changing her. Unschooling transcends being merely an educational approach. It challenges dominant control structures in pursuit of freedom and autonomy. Most simply, unschooling is learning without schooling, rejecting the schooling prototype, with its coercive elements like imposed curriculum, grade levels, subject silos, and arbitrary tests. It separates schooling from education, trusting humans' innate curiosity when surrounded by resources and opportunities. A key differentiator between schooling and unschooling is that unschooling dismisses adult-imposed curriculum entirely. Curriculum, from Latin meaning racing chariot, historically emerged with mass schooling as a tool for control, deciding what subject matter others should study, when, and how. Unschooling challenges this control, allowing learning to become organic rather than regimented, springing from developing interests and passions. For Deanna Sko, transitioning from schooling to homeschooling was straightforward, but moving from homeschooling to unschooling proved more challenging. When she loosened the curriculum reins and allowed her children's intrinsic motivation to guide their learning, she discovered their enthusiasm was endless and motivation strong. Unschooling requires effort, preserving time for true learning, tolerating ambiguity, observing children's interests, connecting them with tools to explore those interests, modeling desired behaviors rather than demanding them, and trusting their natural self-educative abilities. Trusting children may be one of the biggest hurdles to embracing unschooling. Adam Bloom, who grew up unschooled, explains that the biggest difference between school and unschooling is being willing to trust the child. Human beings naturally want to learn unless they're taught that learning is frustrating or boring. Adam never attended school, spending his childhood reading and playing. His father, influenced by Holt and Neil Summerhill, facilitated his learning by providing books on topics that interested him. Now a successful software developer, Adam credits his unschooling for giving him a love of learning and sense of agency. His advice to hesitant parents? Trust that your kids want to learn, they just may not want to learn the way people around them think they should learn. Unschooling has its foundations in progressive educational philosophy that advocates for children's freedom and autonomy in learning. As John Dewey stated, "I believe that education, therefore, is a process of living and not a preparation for future living." Thomas Edison's experience exemplifies early unschooling principles. At age 8, Edison struggled in conventional school, where his teacher called him addled. His mother, Nancy, concerned about the harsh, rigid teaching methods, removed him from school to learn at home. Rather than forcing or prodding, she engaged his interests by providing literature and resources that matched his curiosity. Edison became a voracious reader at 9, devouring Dickens and Shakespeare, and developed a passion for science when his mother gave him R.G. Parker's School of Natural Philosophy. Edison later wrote of his mother, "She understood me. She let me follow my bent." Unschooling's roots extend to early modern philosophers like Locke and Rousseau. Locke believed humans aren't born with pre-existing beliefs, but gain knowledge through experience, while possessing innate talents. He advocated gentle parenting, less coercive education, and childhood play, noting children learn 3 times as much when in tune versus when dragged unwillingly. These philosophers influenced progressive educators like Pestalozzi, Froebel, who created kindergarten, Montessori, and Steiner. The movement eventually forked between John Dewey's path of reforming schooling while maintaining teacher authority and curriculum versus Homer Lane's vision rejecting these elements in favor of freedom and self-direction. Ivan Illich's critique of institutionalized education in his 1970 book, Deschooling Society, argued that schools condition students to confuse teaching with learning, grade advancement with education, a diploma with competence. John Holt, inspired by Illich, eventually abandoned school reform efforts, instead advocating for removing children from schools. In his 1981 book, Teach Your Own, he emphasized that home's value for children's growth is not that it is a better school than the schools, but that it isn't a school at all. Holt coined the term unschooling to encourage further separation from schooled thinking. Meanwhile, Daniel Greenberg left his Columbia University physics professorship to establish Sudbury Valley School in Massachusetts in 1968. Based on democratic principles of self-governance and self-directed learning, Sudbury Valley continues to inspire parents and educators interested in unschooling, with no required classes and young people pursuing their own interests. While many progressive schools declined in the late 20th century, family-centered homeschooling flourished beyond John Holt's expectations. Today, homeschooling includes about 3.5% of the school-age population, around 2 million children, with unschooling's popularity growing steadily. The U.S. Department of Education reports that 20% of homeschooling families in 2016 mostly or always used informal approaches with minimal curriculum, up from 13% in 2012. Research by Peter Gray and Gina Riley shows promising outcomes for grown unschoolers who report high satisfaction with their education. Their 2014 survey found most unschoolers transitioned successfully to college despite little formal academic training, with over half becoming entrepreneurs. Unschooling approaches vary widely, from relaxed homeschooling that incorporates minimal curriculum to radical unschooling that extends self-direction to all aspects of life, including bedtimes, food choices, and screen time. Most families practice what could be called open unschooling, balancing between authoritarian and permissive environment. This approach embodies A.S. Neal's principle of freedom, not license, where children have autonomy that doesn't interfere with others' freedom. As Neal explained, a child is free to go to lessons or stay away from lessons because that is his own affair, but he is not free to play a trumpet when others want to study or sleep. Modern childhood has become increasingly unnatural, with children spending more time indoors and separated from the natural world than previous generations. Just as Michael Pollan contrasts real food with edible food-like substances that harm our health, we've replaced real learning with packaged education-like systems or school stuffs that similarly cause harm. In just one generation, children's learning environments have dramatically changed. Creativity scores had been rising for each generation until 1990, when they began a steady decline. According to Kyung-hee Kim's analysis of Torrance tests of creative thinking scores, kindergartners to sixth graders showed the steepest drops. For parents like Dan Sanchez, preserving childhood creativity drives the decision to unschool. Dan saw how schooling extinguished his own childhood passions, replacing natural curiosity with imposed obligations and grade-seeking. Now watching his 5-year-old daughter's deep focus during imaginative play, he rejects both conventional schooling and structured homeschooling, which still imports many schooled expectations. Just as processed food has become more toxic in ingredients, not just quantity, Today, schooling has become more standardized and test-driven than ever before. The 2001 No Child Left Behind Act expanded federal involvement in education through frequent standardized testing. This intensified with the Common Core State Standards Initiative in 2009, with states incentivized to adopt uniform curriculum frameworks through Race to the Top grants. Former teacher Jessica Yarmosky left her profession after discovering how test-focused education was destroying students' love of learning. "I would have kids say to me, 'I used to like writing, I used to like reading, and now I hate it,'" she recalls. Despite increased standardization, educational outcomes remain disappointing, with U.S. students ranking 38th in math and 24th in science internationally. Research shows direct instruction limits children's natural discovery abilities. Studies from MIT and UC Berkeley found that when children were taught how to use toys rather than exploring them independently, they discovered fewer features and were less creative in their play. The restrictive system of forced schooling appears particularly damaging to poor and minority children. According to Department of Education data, thousands of preschoolers receive out-of-school suspensions, with Black children disproportionately affected. Academic outcomes for minority students are concerning, with only 14% of African American and 17% of Hispanic eighth graders scoring at proficient reading levels. These disappointing results may explain why minority families increasingly choose alternatives to conventional schooling. Temple University professor Ama Mazama found African American families turning to homeschooling as an exercise in agency inspired by the desire to defeat racism through physical removal from one of its major spheres of operation, school. For Shaylana Graham, an African American mother, the decision to homeschool and eventually unschool came from watching her children learn naturally without interference. She rejected preschool programs that were indoor-based, academically focused, and all about kindergarten prep, recognizing her children thrived in an environment where they had a lot of free time to play and create from their own imagination. Tracy Ventola's daughter, initially diagnosed with selective mutism in kindergarten, flourished after being removed from school. She became happy, talkative, and engaged as they embraced unschooling with a peaceful daily rhythm of playtime, library visits, and park outings. As she deschooled, she grew more confident and extroverted, teaching herself to read just before turning 9 and quickly becoming a voracious reader. Today at 12, this formerly silent child performs comedy theater in front of large audiences. Tracy believes many so-called disorders are simply allergies to school stuffs, extreme adaptive responses to artificial school environments. As schooling shifts to earlier ages for longer hours, children who cannot adapt are labeled troublemakers or diagnosed with various impediments. When children's natural learning processes are respected rather than forced, they develop literacy and numeracy skills organically, on their own timetables. The case of 5-year-old John, documented by psychology professor Jane Torrey in 1969, provides compelling evidence for natural reading acquisition. This poor African-American boy from a segregated Southern school learned to read before kindergarten without formal instruction, primarily through television commercials, food labels, and exposure to books. Torrey concluded that reading is learned, not taught, and that children learn in environments with sufficient stimulation and materials. Research on unschooled children reveals an average reading proficiency age of 8 to 9 years, though with wide variation. Alan Thomas and Harriet Pattison found that children learning outside formal settings often acquire reading spontaneously, frequently resisting formal instruction. Phoebe Wells's 3 unschooled children exemplify this variability. One learned at 4, another at 8, and the third at 13. Her wicked late reader went from Cat in the Hat to Shakespeare in a matter of a month at 13, later becoming a professional ballet dancer and eventually a pre-med student. This natural reading timeline contradicts school expectations, where reading is taught in kindergarten, with third grade marking a critical transition from learning to read to reading to learn. Harriet Pattison's research on 400 home-educated children confirmed a bell curve distribution of reading ages, with many children learning after age 7 yet quickly achieving proficiency. The dangers of forced early reading are significant. Nancy Carlson Page and colleagues warn that developmentally inappropriate reading instruction can cause feelings of inadequacy, anxiety, and confusion. Research by Sebastian Suggett comparing early readers, instruction at age 5, with later readers, instruction at age 7, found that while early readers initially showed higher skills, this advantage disappeared by age 11, with later readers actually demonstrating better comprehension. Like natural literacy, numeracy flourishes when children engage with math through play rather than coercion. Math anxiety is largely a product of conventional education's approach. Unschooling parents create numeracy-rich environments with games, books, and activities available but not required. As unschooling mother Heather Svanidze notes, conventional schooling taught her to relinquish responsibility for her own learning. "I never went home at the end of a school year and checked out library books on subjects I had gotten excited about." Mathematical concepts are embedded in everyday activities like baking, grocery shopping, and budgeting. While technology and automation may hide some numeracy practices, they also provide powerful tools for learning mathematical concepts through play. Researcher Carlo Ricci documents how children develop quantitative concepts by exploring digital tools like timers, alarms, and weather apps on devices. Grown unschooler Ani Pond shares how she learned math through games, baking, travel estimations, and commerce. She advises parents to be present but act as facilitators rather than teachers. When children are taught how to learn and how to teach themselves, they can learn anything on their own when it becomes necessary. Research shows unschoolers often succeed in formal academics when they choose it, quickly adapting to conventional education if it becomes a priority. Andre Uhl, an MIT Media Lab researcher focusing on artificial intelligence and ethics, discovered unschooling unexpectedly when his 4-year-old daughter Bliss was enrolled in public pre-kindergarten. When visiting the school, they were shocked to learn parents couldn't stay during a transition period to help their daughter adjust. When Bliss expressed anxiety about being left alone, the teacher assured her they had many toys to distract you. Bliss wisely replied, "But I don't want to be distracted. I just don't want to be sad." Struck by their daughter's wisdom and the school's rigid system that deprived everyone of compassion, Andre and his wife Coco promised to provide a learning environment that would respect rather than dismiss their daughter's feelings. Now Bliss learns through everyday experiences, pursues her interests at libraries and museums, takes circus classes, and attends the McComber Center, a self-directed learning center for unschoolers. At MIT Media Lab, founding faculty member Seymour Papert recognized how new technologies would transform education. Influenced by Piaget's constructivist theory, Papert believed children build knowledge through play and experimentation. In his 1980 book, Mindstorms, he described Piagetian learning, or learning without being taught, arguing that technology could facilitate natural learning without direct teaching. Papert foresaw the end of conventional schooling, believing schools as we know them today will have no place in the future. Dr. Sugata Mitra's hole-in-the-wall experiments demonstrated technology's power to enable learning without schooling. By placing computers with internet access in Indian slums, he observed how disadvantaged children taught themselves computer literacy through collaboration and curiosity. Without instructions or adult assistance, these children gained remarkable skills within weeks, learning at rates comparable to those in teacher-directed settings. Today's technological advancements make unschooling more accessible than ever. Whether learning skateboarding, bug preservation, home repairs, or cooking, YouTube and other platforms enable self-directed education by letting learners choose their instructors based on what resonates with them. This aligns with Ivan Illich's vision in De-schooling Society of educational webs that transform moments into opportunities for learning and sharing. Ken Robinson's TED Talk, Do Schools Kill Creativity, remains the most watched in TED history, with over 50 million views. His premise is that our education system strips young people of their natural curiosity by forcing them into a one-dimensional academic mold. Robinson argues we must adopt a new conception of human ecology and fundamentally rethink how we educate children. Alec Resnick is doing exactly this with Powderhouse Studios, a self-directed public high school being built from the ground up. Inspired by Illich's deschooling society, Resnick's vision is for a school that looks nothing like traditional education, resembling instead a modern R&D lab where teens design multi-year projects without classes, grades, or testing. Concerns about technology's impact on children echo historical anxieties about new innovations. In 1897, a London writer worried the telephone would make us nothing but transparent heaps of jelly to each other. Similarly, 19th-century critics feared novels would throw readers into unreal excitement and trance. Today's technology criticisms may reflect schooling problems rather than technology itself. For school children, smartphones provide freedom within otherwise controlled lives. Researcher Dana Boyd finds teens are compelled by friendship through technology, not gadgetry itself. Contrary to addiction narratives, a 2016 study in the American Journal of Psychiatry found minimal evidence of gaming addiction, while Massachusetts General Hospital research showed video games fulfill emotional, social, and intellectual needs. Unschooling resource centers are spreading rapidly as educators grow weary of rigid, test-driven schooling and parents seek options that preserve children's natural curiosity. These centers offer a hybrid learning model that makes self-directed education more accessible to families who might otherwise find unschooling impractical. Single parents, families with two working parents, or those with skeptical family members. These centers allow parents to register as homeschoolers, maintaining legal compliance with compulsory education laws, while children attend centers that cost a fraction of private school tuition. Centers provide resources many families can't offer at home: musical instruments, woodworking studios, art supplies, and access to community experts. The defining characteristics are freedom and choice, with resources and adults available, but most activities remaining optional. The first self-directed learning center in America was founded by Peter Bergson and his wife in 1978 in Pennsylvania, after being influenced by John Holt's How Children Fail. Open Connections has flourished for 40 years on a 28-acre historic farm, serving children ages 4 to 18 who attend only 2 to 3 days weekly. The center views itself in partnership with parents, who remain primarily responsible for their children's education. While Bergson was expanding Open Connections in the early 1990s, Ken Danford was growing disillusioned teaching 8th-grade social studies in public school. After reading Grace Llewellyn's The Teenage Liberation Handbook, he had a revelation. "I realized that the major issue was that my students didn't want to be at school. I was forcing them to learn and do things that they didn't want to learn and do." In 1996, Danford left teaching to launch North Star, a self-directed learning center for teenagers in Massachusetts. The center serves as a community resource where teens can gather, take trips, and optionally participate in classes or tutoring. There are no grades or attendance requirements. Teens spend non-center days in jobs, internships, community activities, or taking college classes. Ken observed profound changes in teens who joined North Star. Often deeply unhappy in conventional schools, they regained creativity and enjoyment of learning once given freedom in a coercion-free environment. "Happiness precedes accomplishment," he notes, though parents often struggle more than teens with this approach, anxiously asking, "What about math?" after just a few months of deschooling. Since opening, North Star has served over 500 teens, many going on to competitive colleges and successful careers. The center's success led to the creation of Liberated Learners, a nonprofit that helps launch similar centers worldwide. In 2013, public school teacher George Popham discovered North Star by chance and was captivated by its approach. Disturbed by how conventional schooling was killing students' natural creativity and intrinsic enthusiasm, he quit teaching and launched Bay State Learning Center in 2014 with over 20 young people aged 10 to 19. With the motto, Learn Life, Bay State offers a flexible schedule from part-time to 5 days weekly for families needing full-time options. The center features maker spaces with tools and technology, optional classes like dystopian literature, and complete freedom regarding screen time and how children spend their day. We need educated citizens, not schooled ones. Mass schooling's patterns of conformity and authoritarianism limit our ability to address societal challenges and prevent human potential from flourishing. The industrial age's conventional schooling crushes creativity, hampers exuberance, stifles curiosity, and halts invention. Precisely the qualities essential for the emerging imagination age. These qualities exist naturally in every child. Our job isn't to teach them, but to stop destroying them. The McAllen Public Library in Texas exemplifies what community learning resources can be. Housed in a renovated 123,000-square-foot former Walmart, this welcoming space offers 116 computer labs, a cafe, meeting rooms with video conferencing, and a 180-seat auditorium, all free and open 7 days a week. Libraries across America have transformed into dynamic learning spaces, lending not just books, but tools like sewing machines, musical instruments, telescopes, fishing rods, and more. Unlike schools, libraries don't discriminate by age, aren't compulsory, and impose no regulations on what or how to learn. Freedom drives educators like Scott Evans and Gabriel Cooper, who created Unschool San Juan in 2017, a radical public school with no grades, tests, or homework. Students work in multi-age, interest-based groups rather than traditional grade levels, with access to maker spaces, tools, and community mentors. With 20 years of district experience each, these veteran teachers grew frustrated with a system that was failing students. Their superintendent supported their vision to create a self-directed high school where students pursue their own projects while still meeting core district requirements. While some educators reform from within, entrepreneurs like Manisha Snoyer build entirely new educational models. Inspired by her experience as both a teaching artist and Airbnb host, Manisha created Cottage Class, a platform that does for education what Airbnb did for lodging. With angel investment from Airbnb's co-founder, Cottage Class helps edupreneurs create and deliver educational programs by handling administrative functions while connecting them with interested families. The future of education ultimately rests with parents. They will decide whether to continue funneling $600+ billion annually into conventional schooling or invest in non-coercive, self-directed alternatives. The infrastructure for an unschooled but highly educated society already exists, from unschooling families and self-directed learning centers to community resources and technology platforms. Children aren't widgets on an assembly line needing to be worked on for over a decade. Education is a natural process of absorbing and synthesizing content and culture that can be supported without destroying curiosity and imagination. An unschooled future envisions non-coercive, self-directed education for all young people, leveraging both real and virtual resources with adults who facilitate more than teach. Moving beyond industrial schooling opens countless possibilities for learning. As parents, we decide whether to remain trapped in conventional schooling or embrace an approach that nurtures curious, well-educated children. Unschooling ourselves is the first step.